welcome to AFL Tonight. I am your host, Tim Capper. This is ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. First, let's go ahead and bring in Adam Markowitz. How
hey,
are you?
Hey.
How was the B-Day for you?
Another year older, another year broker. What can I tell you?
It's not like everybody, doesn't it?
I know.
Adam had a very interesting article this past week. I'm sure a lot of you have read it. We're going to talk about it a little bit later on in the show. But it was a lot of food for thought, Adam. I thought it was a very well-written article. I know you had two out of three articles this past week were positive.
Well, at least not negative.
Well, yeah, at least not negative. But I thought the one with the eight ideas on what the league needs to do was very well thought out. So,
well, thank you.
Interesting stuff as usual this past week in the Arena Football League. A lot, some positive, some negative. Isn't there always, Adam? I tell you.
Yeah. Okay.
Where should we start? You know what? I think probably one of the best things we'll start off with the negative here this week. Positive this week. Freudian slip. You know, we have probably two best rivalries ever in the Arena Football League this past week. Tampa and, Orlando in what Adam has summarily decided to call the bore or the snore on I-4, at least recently. And then there is the Arizona and San Jose matchups. I don't think we really need to go into what happened with Tampa and Orlando, because it was just not
– bad.
Yeah, pretty bad.
It was as bad as you would figure based on the final score of the game.
Yeah, the only thing we can say is, if I'm not mistaken, I think was it this week that they did? Yeah, it was – no, it was another game. It was another game. But we – you know, poor Orlando, having so many games where they've blown these leads this year. And
well, this one wasn't the lead. This one was just – I mean, they were up 10-7.
Yeah, I know. Oh, 3 points. Doesn't register in our all-time worst losses. I mean, they already hold that now. It could get worse. But I think we want to center basically on the positive with the Arizona and San Jose game. You came up with a stat during the game last week. The total point score between these two teams has been almost – 2,000 each.
Yeah, and it's pretty remarkable to realize, you know, how much history really is there between, between these two teams. It's not quite as storied as Orlando-Tampa Bay, even though these two have played in the same number of arena bowls that Orlando and Tampa Bay have had against each other. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a hell of a game for sure on Friday night.
Saturday night.
I'm sorry, Saturday night.
It was, from what we're checking here, I mean, we talk about how anything can happen in the Arena Football League, and I will admit, I've become a skeptic in my old age, or if I just have totally forgotten where to go when it comes to the Arena Football League and how these teams score. I mean, we had a grand total, I think it was 7 ties, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 ties. Every single time that the game was tied by San Jose, Arizona would pull ahead, except for the fourth quarter is where it mattered the most, which included 3 straight scores by the Sabercats in the fourth quarter, which also included a very, very important net recovery by Dodd Masters.
Yeah, and you knew at halftime of that game, Arizona had 49 on the board, and San Jose came out and they kept plugging, and every shot that Arizona kept giving it, San Jose kept giving it back, and it felt like the shots were getting, you know, felt like San Jose was scoring easier and easier, and Arizona's scores were coming harder and harder, and that something was going to happen at some point, to take what was going between a 7 and a 14 point game and making it between a 7 and a, you know, 7 point game and a tie game. And that's what happened. Arizona got a little bit lucky in the kicking game.
Yep.
You know, they got the recovery. They got the they got the onside kick. But in the end, the defense had to come up with something, and it did. And credit to both teams. I mean, both teams were clearly good enough to win this game.
It's funny when you talk about defense, and you have both these teams, which both teams had over 350 total yards of offense, and you think about defense. You know, but that's, you know, I think a true gauge of a great Arena Football League game, Adam, is like when you – obviously, we know time of possession doesn't mean anything in this league.
No.
But these two teams alone, if you had these two teams were basically at 30 minutes each, that right there should equal – an amazing Arena Football League game.
Yeah, it doesn't always, but
no.
But yeah, I mean the fact you could just look at the, you know, you just look at the number of stops in this game. San Jose turned the ball over once in the first half, and Arizona turned the ball over was twice in the second half.
Yep.
Got unlucky in the kicking game once, and San Jose really created its own luck. The second time, but you know, these two teams really for a long time have represented, you know, the good parts of this league. I mean, it goes without saying these are two of the probably four to five best teams in the league easily, and they may be the two best teams in the league.
Now, could we call this game an instant classic? There would have been so many instant classics between these two teams. Would we put this game up there with one of them? Since the league's been back into, I mean, obviously, as I said, it's not. I think the Tampa Bay series is now 25-24 Tampa Bay, if I'm not mistaken. This one, mm-hmm. I think, is...
this one's 21-18 in favor of San Jose.
21-18. I mean, would...
21-16, yep. Not 21-18.
Would you put this up there as one of the classics between these two?
There have been... Well, sure better than the Arena Bowl that San Jose nearly shut out Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
This is the, let's see here, 14th time that, you know, in the 37 games that the teams were decided by 8 points or fewer, and five of those were 1 point games, including the first meeting of the year. To be honest with you, the first meeting of the year may have been even better than this one.
Yeah, I know.
That was a game that ended up going to overtime and was decided on a failed 2-point conversion play in OT by Arizona. So again, you look at that first game, you saw 141 points, and in the end, it was the defense that made made the defense. Mm-hmm. That, I'm sorry, made the difference for the game. So one of the best, sure. Not even so sure it was the best one of the year, though. That's not to downplay the game. The game was one of the best 10 for sure all season long, and probably one of the best 5 all season long. But it probably didn't top what happened in week one.
No. This is probably a question mark. And I mean, with Arizona, with San Jose sweeping the series, obviously they have a huge game this coming up this week for first place versus Utah. But
this is bad news for the Rattlers, though. I mean, this is three losses and three losses in division, and it's going to be really, really hard from, you know, a game back and now the tiebreaker for the season. Yeah, and really. Unless things turn around, Arizona's going to lose every tiebreaker in the book in that division. So you look at it, you know, you look over in the other division in the American Conference, and you say, I'm sorry, in the National Conference, and you say, wow, could Arizona miss the playoffs? I would deem it as not likely, mm-hmm. but you know, I would not be shocked if the Rattlers finish third in that division, and if that's the case, you know, they'd have to go to whether it be Chicago or, you know, wherever. In the first round of the playoffs, and would probably have to go through either San Jose or Utah. So this is not going to be easy for the Rattlers to get back to the Arena Bowl this year, even though the team probably is probably not quite as good, but probably almost as good as last year's team was.
Now, one thing I could easily mention this when we talk about the games that are coming up this week, obviously San Jose, Utah. San Jose themselves did lose some pretty heavy hitters when it comes to players this week. They did lose Ben Nelson to an undisclosed
gruesome-looking knee injury.
Yeah, and as they say in the what did they say in the NHL, a lower body injury.
Yeah.
And we don't know what's happening with their fullback, which is their leading fullback, in Tommy Taggart Jr. Could that hurt San Jose going down the line? As I said, they got the game coming up this weekend. They had just a huge momentum swing being up on Arizona the way they are. Utah, you know, they're going to Utah, and they have to really make up some of these players. Now, Samora Goodson really did step up this past week. So did Hank Edwards. I mean, monster game. Are they going to miss these two guys too much?
No.
No?
No. Wide receivers... pretty, you know, generally in the history of this league are a dime a dozen. I mean, yeah, you know, if you've got Damian Harrell, if you've got Eddie Brown back in the day, if you've got Barry Wagner back in the day, you know, you've got something special here. Ben Nelson is one of the best receivers in the league, but so is Hank Edwards, and so, you know, and he hasn't even been able to find his way on the team you know, of late. San Jose is just so loaded at wide receiver. It's at fullback, whatever. I mean, I'm more worried about what the guy could do as a blocker than anything else, because you got to keep Mark Grebe upright.
Right.
And the truth of the matter is, he's got such tremendous. You know, the one thing that hasn't gone anywhere with Grebe is his accuracy. Yeah, he could still put the ball wherever he wants to put the ball, and even at the 1 yard line, if you're telling me. First of all, any big man with good blocking in front of him should be scoring from the 1 yard line almost every time.
Exactly, and it's so, true thing about Grebe too is that this year compared to last year, you know, he had that really career season, you know, career high season when it came to interceptions and whatnot. He's bounced back pretty well this year. So
yeah, he seems to have more help this year. It feels like the San Jose team is playing like San Jose should be playing.
Right,
and not last year's team that kind of. There were some games last year that said, wow, this team is really good. And then there were some, like that 80, whatever it was, to 20 loss against Cleveland. That games like that just mean to say, wow, that's not like San Jose.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, part of it's the times of the new league. You know, it's not set up to have, you know, those, I mean, I know we had it last year with Arizona and with Jacksonville, but if all things are created equal, and it's debatable as to whether all things are created equal, but if they are, it really, I mean, every team should have their ups and downs every single season.
Right. With the game, this, by the way, Grebe was, I guess we could say it was a milestone for him. He actually passed Clint Dozell when it came to total career passing yards, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh yeah, he moved up to second all time in career passing yards, just under 45,000 now.
Crazy.
Of course, he's still got a little bit of ways to go to get to Mr. Garcia, but
yeah, exactly. Considering it with him still playing.
So I mean, yeah, Grebe now has 44,669 yards, so he may get to 45,000 this week. If he doesn't this week, he certainly will next week. When it's said and done, if he gets to 50,000, I mean, he's nobody else is going to do that. When you really think about it, the next guy in line is John Dutton at 35.5.
I know.
And the next active guy is Nick Davila, and he's, you know, he's not even a third of the way to Grebe.
Exactly. Well, I'm curious. I don't think we ever checked this out. The average yards passed by these guys who are leading, yards per season. I don't think we ever tried that or checked that. But
It's more irrelevant because Davila is playing, you know, in this 18-game season, whereas Aaron Garcia was playing in a 15-game season once upon a time.
Yes, yeah, good point. Very good point. Speaking of great quarterbacks, we had basically a record-tying game this past week in Utah, Adam. I mean, Tommy Grady, what can I say? Becomes the third quarterback in Arena Football League history to pass for 11 touchdowns in a single game. Tying the record held by Aaron Garcia and Clint Dozell.
Yeah, I mean it's awfully impressive. I mean I'll say that it's anytime you can throw 11 touchdown passes in a game, and anytime you score 11 touchdowns in a game, that's pretty impressive. But you know, we know Utah's defense isn't very good, and we know Utah's offense is very good.
Mm-hmm.
But Grady's thrown 64 touchdown passes this year, 62 touchdown passes this year. He's on pace for 140 touchdowns. Think about that. 140 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Record's 117.
I know.
I mean, he may legitimately break the record in a 16-game season.
I know.
That'd be really, really, really impressive. So, yeah, props to Tommy Grady and the Blaze. The Blaze are kind of the forgotten team, almost, in the West.
It's true. Even though they're off to, I think, team best start.
At 6-2, you really shouldn't be flying under the radar, but it almost feels like the Blaze are flying under the radar. Now, has the schedule been the most brutal in the world for the Blaze? For a Western team, I mean, maybe not. You know, Iowa, San Antonio, Jacksonville, Milwaukee as the road game so far. This is still a team that has to go to San Jose, has to go to Spokane, has to go to Arizona, and has to go to Philly. We'll see at that point. I still think the Blaze are a really good team.
Yeah.
Are they an Arena Bowl team? Time will tell. Time will definitely tell. There's still two games with Arizona left. There's a game with Philly left. There's a game with Spokane left. They're not going to beat Spokane by 21 on the road this year.
And it also, I think this is also the same Utah team, I think a couple of years back, that I actually said was going to go to the Arena Bowl, but It was also, I think, the year that Tommy Grady went down, and I think which totally ruined their ruined everything, anything that they had going for them.
And this team is still can't play defense. I mean, you look at this team really has only had one good defensive game this year, and every other game the team's allowed at least 54 points.
Yeah.
I mean, in the first quarter this week, in all likelihood, they're going to have 500 points allowed for the season.
Yeah.
They're only plus 33 in points for the year, and that's. You know, when you look at what Philly's doing and what San Jose is doing and what Arizona's doing, that's not that impressive.
No.
It's just not. But to their credit, you know, the Blazers are finding ways to win games. But again, the schedule, you know, they've already drawn San Jose, but they've drawn San Jose at home. You know, they've drawn Spokane at home. Their road trips, as we mentioned, some of them have been far, but they haven't necessarily been the hardest trips in the world. Let's see what happens these next couple weeks against San Jose and Arizona, and then we'll make a better judgment on this Utah team.
And speaking of Utah, it just seems to be like deja vu all over for the Blaze once again. They have, you know, one of the better place kickers in the league, but yet this is a team that has yet, like last year, yet to attempt a field goal.
Now, when you've got quarterbacks throwing for 11 touchdown passes, I mean, this is the second time Tommy Grady's thrown for at least 10 this year.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've got that, I mean, you don't really need a kicker all that often, but I think it's funny that in the last, you know, year and now almost a half, that this team has tried 3 field goals and has made one.
Yep, one field goal made in the last 26 games, and they have attempted a grand total of, as you said, 3. So
we haven't looked this up, but I have to imagine that this 4-game stretch that Grady's got with, let's see here, 11, 19, 20, with 37 touchdown passes has to be a record. It has to be.
Yeah.
And more impressively is just 2 picks, and he's averaged well over 40 passes a game. That's impressive. That's really, really impressive. And I think, you know, if you're looking at the, you know, kind of almost, kind of sort of halfway point of the season at this point, Grady's got to be the league's MVP. I mean, maybe Dan Radabaugh, but I don't think so. I think it's Tommy Grady.
No, I totally agree with you on that one. Totally agree. I was going to say earlier is that if Grady continues his pace, if he doesn't get the most offensive player? Whatever they call it. I know they keep changing the name.
No. The most offensive player is clearly whoever's playing quarterback for Orlando. But the best.
Nice.
Tommy Grady's season, if he stays healthy, and really, I mean, part of it is because his defense is so bad. So if his defense stays this bad and he stays upright and healthy, I can't even fathom the numbers that he's going to put up. I mean, he's going to probably throw the ball over. You know, over 700 times this year.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, think about that. 700 times.
I know. That's a lot. That's freaking a lot, man.
That's a lot of passes. I mean, if this team does go to the Arena Bowl, it's not overly likely that he ends up throwing the ball 1,000 times, but it's only an average of, what did I just say here? Let's see. 1,000 passes divided by 21 games. It's only 47 a game, and right now, you know, he's got... He's already got three games of at least 46 passes, so it's really remarkable. I mean, he's averaging 43 a game right now, pass attempts.
That's crazy.
I mean, the record books are going to be obliterated, and it's not just going to be because if it's an 18-game season. I mean, yes, it's going to be obliterated because it's an 18-game season, but...
If he can do it in 16 legitimately, then that should set quite a precedent.
And it is. And the thing, this team doesn't have the best scoring offense in the league.
No, exactly.
It may not even have the second best scoring offense in its own division when the league's said and done with.
We have quite a few teams this year that have had multiple games that have been over, I think we're saying 60 points, consecutive games. Philly really holds the record, even though they lost this past week. You know, every game that they've played this year, they've had over 60.
Yeah, that's definitely an impressive offense as well.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of Philadelphia, they are the second team so far this year that has yet to try a field goal, and funny, maybe they'll try a new one. They just were assigned a new kicker this week. Maybe they'll get their first in. Who knows, right? let's see here.
Doug Plank didn't kick a lot of field goals with Georgia. I don't think he's going to kick a lot of field goals now either.
No, I don't think so. I mean, either way, it was a great week, and we had 4 games decided by less than 6 points. It was a good week overall when it came to scoring in the league, and as far as games that were half decent, you know, when it came to exciting games.
Yeah, there were some stinkers, but this was probably the best holistic week that we've had of the year, I would say.
I was actually disappointed with the San Jose Arizona game. I wanted to see the game on Cox 7, but for some reason it wasn't working. Ustream obviously was not seen to be working properly, but it did come up where I got to see the ending of the game, so that's really all that mattered.
You need to get Cox 7 as a sponsor of the show.
Yeah, they have the
pimp. I don't know,
dude. I tell you, they have the best stream when it comes to watching a game because it is directly from the direct broadcast from Cox 7. It's above and beyond anything right now that Ustream has put out there.
Cool. I still haven't watched one yet, but cool.
I mean, because it used to be when it was on Nifty. The games to watch would have been the ones out of the Spokane area because it was a direct game brought over. I will admit, good production value on the Pittsburgh games that are shown on.
I saw a Pittsburgh game on the on Orlando TV actually a few weeks ago, yeah. And aside from the fact that it was a terrible game, the announcers really had no clue what they were talking about.
Yeah, but I mean production value at least. But yeah, I mean it's, and we got some. Well, we'll go over the games coming up this week, so I don't. we'll go over those. We'll go over those in a little bit. An interesting thing happened the other day, and Commissioner Kurz had an extension given to him through the year 2017 unanimously. Quote-unquote unanimous by the Board of Governors or Board of Directors, whatever it is. And the extension was through 2017. What I thought was actually very interesting, Adam, was that almost a year ago, a little bit more than 12 months ago, the league put out a PR saying that he was getting an extension through 2013.
Good math here by the league.
Yeah, they had said it was going to be it's an extra 5+ year extension, but the thing is,
either it's actually a 4-year extension or everybody got lied to last year.
Or there was a change or whatever it was because 2013 plus 5 years, I could swear that equals 18, right?
Yeah, well, you know, they use Dak stats to figure that out.
Dak Stats was gone. Maybe they did the PR prior to that. They only announced it after a year later after that.
Yeah.
I guess we can go. We'll go ahead and we'll. You know what? I think we'll go ahead and segue. I know we have a lot of stuff that we can talk about, but I think we'll segue with this talk about Commissioner Kurz into the article that you did this week. Within these next 4+ years, we'll leave it at that. 4+ years left in his current tenureship. You came up with 8 decent, very decent points about what the commissioner, the league needs to do in order to, I guess we could say, improve the Arena Football League game as it is even more.
Yeah, I mean, I could have given 80 things to do, but, you know, for the purpose of the fact that I didn't want to sit there for 5 days typing this article, and you probably didn't want to sit there for right. 5 days reading the article, I limited it to just 8. But yeah, I think it's very clear to me, and I mean, say, you know, I'm negative if you want, but I think there are plenty of signs that point to the fact that this is short of 1989, the worst season the AFL's ever had.
And we'll talk about attendance about that in a little while. But yeah, so far this would be if the season ended today, it would be the second worst ever attendance average.
And that 89 season, for anybody that goes back that far, and granted, I was only 4 years old, so I had to look it up in the history books, but. You know, that was a season where it was, okay, who wants to play this game and who wants to host these games?
Yeah, the barnstorming season was unique.
Yeah, unique is probably a very good word for it. But, you know, I don't think the idea of bringing Commissioner Kurz back is necessarily a good idea or a bad idea. I do think it shows stability, and I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that stability that's missing. You know, okay, great, it's in the league office, but it's the game's not played. I almost said the game's not played in Chicago. The game's not played in the league office.
No.
The game's played on the fields, and there's no consistency there, and one of the you know what I started off with right away was giving players, you know, giving teams the ability to sign players to long-term deals, and I went on for a while about how a guy like Nick Hill ultimately did Orlando no good when he left for Tampa Bay. Granted, he left from Tampa Bay to Green Bay. Nobody really saw that coming.
Nope.
But there are so many other players that it's like, just as these guys are starting to get themselves identified as the quote, face of the franchise, they leave.
Well, I don't think anybody expected, like you're talking about R.J. Archer being invited to the Detroit Lions minicamp.
Yeah, but R.J. Archer was not – R.J. Archer wasn't even holding the starting quarterback job.
Agreed, I know, on top of that, I know.
You know, so that's either Dean Kokinos has no idea what he's doing and the Detroit Lions have no idea what they're doing, one or the other. It's probably the Lions with their history. Maybe Matt Millen pulled the trigger on that one. But that's something that I think is really important, having guys you can print on season tickets and every season ticket holder would know who they are, whether they see the name on the back of the jersey or not.
Totally agree with you. And I think it's one of the things that we have mentioned quite a few times over the past couple seasons, ever since the AFL has been reborn. You need to be able to have players that you can identify with that are, as I said, are the face of the franchise from year to year. You know, minor league baseball, you're going to have a guy that's called up. You may be able to have a guy there, especially I think double A is usually where they hang around mostly, double A before they hit triple A.
Yeah, but you know you're getting that with double A baseball.
Exactly, exactly.
You know if you're going to a double A baseball game, you're not going to see the same guys there every single game for the entire year and year after year. But what you can identify with in a lot of those cases is being with the same franchise.
Yes.
Picture it as if every AFL team back in 2008 had an affiliate team with the AF2.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you could shuttle players, which you couldn't, from the AF2 to the AFL, AF2 fans would have to understand at that point that those players were going up to, quote, the big league squad.
Right. Right.
So, and when we have that we had that in the IHL, when we had the Orlando Solar Bears here.
The
original Solar Bears. But we knew those, a lot of those players had the potential of being called up by the Atlanta Thrashers at any point, and some of them did. But we followed the Thrashers too because we were happy to see those guys going
exactly.
on to the next level.
Exactly.
If that were the case with the AFL, I think we would be a lot less upset when a guy like a Donovan Morgan leaves. If the UFL were affiliated with the AFL and were looked at as a true step above the AFL, but we didn't admit to that.
No.
You know, we didn't admit that the UFL was bigger, and turns out the UFL wasn't bigger. But, you know, I don't think there's anybody with the force. You know, forget about the fact that R.J. Archer kind of has sucked at some points this year, but I don't think there's anybody with the force that can say, wow, it's that disappointing if this guy left knowing. I mean, he's got a shot at the NFL. Isn't that the goal of every football player, to play in the NFL?
Yeah, I would say so. And if not, obviously their fallback would be the CFL.
Or it used to be the AFL.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you know, that's an important thing, is having some sort of way to market your own franchise. And I know they try this with the quote marketing players. You don't see me doing the air quotes there.
Yeah,
but
it didn't work. It didn't work.
But even if it's not, you could do it with everybody. Even if it's you can only do it with three guys or five guys or two guys or whatever. But giving the ability to sign those guys for deals that are, I didn't mention this part in the article, but that are somewhat guaranteed deals,
mm-hmm.
as well, to guarantee to the player that they're going to be taken care of, and to guarantee the fans that player is going to be a part of their team.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, and I'd have to go back and double check my information, but there is a little known clause in the player contract stating that they can be held with the teams, that it could be a team's rights for up to 2 years. But as we're seeing, it's not really occurring that way. I guess it's more or less once it free agency comes about or the year ends, everybody is done. Their contracts are null and void, and they can go wherever they want.
Well, I mean, it's not a matter of a contract is null and void. It's just a matter of the contract only runs through the end of the, quote, football year, which I don't know if we ever really clarified what the end of the football year is, but mm-hmm. it's probably the Arena Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, the second that game is over, those players are out there celebrating in those jerseys, but a lot of them know they aren't going to be back.
Well, and we saw exactly the case in this past year's Arena Bowl champions.
Yeah. I mean, Jacksonville got just crippled by specifically San Antonio.
Yeah. So it's I do think, yeah, there needs to be a longer-term contract in the AFL. At least 2 years. At least 2 years so you can do the proper marketing, gain some following, be able to pull in the crowds, be able to, you know, it's, you do not need, unfortunately, we've had this way too many times, is where you need a scorecard. Sure, usually you think you'd have a scorecard at the beginning of the year, but to have one every single year.
And every single game.
And every single game. You really, that's, I mean, how do you think the CFL would do if that was the exact same? 1 year contracts. It wouldn't work. CFL.
No, of course it wouldn't work.
The CFL would not be what it is. They would.
And the truth of the matter is, if you had brought this up in 2005 or 2006 or 2007, that every player in the league was going to have a 1 year deal, Commissioner Baker and everybody, you know, the powers that be at the top probably would have laughed and said, wow, that's never going to work. I mean, I understand that times are different now, but I mean, you knew going into the offseason that, you know, for the most part, if you had a good quarterback, he was going to stay your quarterback.
Yeah.
From year to year. Yeah, I mean, sure, guys do leave, but it wasn't, you know, you knew at the end of a season that a lot of those names were going to be back. And to make matters even better, when Colorado got a guy like John Dutton, he became, when they signed him, the face of their franchise,
exactly.
And they knew he was going to be there for a long time.
Exactly. Exactly.
So there's notoriety built up there, too. You know, when Barry Wagner went to San Jose, they knew they were getting, you know, sure, he played 3,000 miles away in Orlando, but you knew this was where he played for his career.
Right.
We're not going to mention the few days that he technically spent with the New Jersey Red Dogs.
Right. Exactly. But nothing you happen to mention, because I know what you're talking about there with contracts, talks about another one of your points is cut roster size and get rid of the standard contract. How many – we can talk about that real quickly. The rosters have only been at what they are for how many years? It's not been that long that it's been –
No, it hasn't been this long, but I mean, it's pretty out in the open now that teams have the ability to spend a little bit over $10,000 per week on their roster. I would rather see the league say you have a cap of $10,000 per week than saying, you know, and putting a minimum on it, putting the minimum of $200 or $250 or whatever, just enough to make it so they're getting paid more than they're getting paid in the PIFL and the IFL and all that, which is pretty much $200 a week.
And they have to spend, like they did in the old contracts, there was a stipulation where they had to spend, I think it was like at least 82%, I think, of the contract.
Yeah, I don't remember what the number was, but you know, you have to spend, or say you have to spend it all.
Yeah.
You know, you could, with a number that low, you could make, you know, if the players union was going to fight it, you know, say, okay, they've got to spend it all. You know, if you want part of that to be a win bonus or some sort of other incentive bonus, great. But yeah, I think if you cut roster sizes, to whether it be 16 or 18 or whatever it is that you take the worst of the league and get rid of it. And I know it puts guys out of jobs and you don't like putting guys out of jobs, but I mean, there's a point, you know, there's just a point where you look at some of these guys and say, these guys shouldn't be playing in this league. And the coaches see that too, because they cut them.
You know, I know.
Yeah. So, and it goes back to, you know, my point right before was getting rid of some of these teams. You know, I'm sorry, Kansas City, it's not working. You know, I'm sorry, Georgia, it's not working at the Gwinnett Center anymore. It's not. It's never going to at this point.
Atlanta and the surrounding area has been known to be a very, very bad market when it comes to fan support.
Yeah, and especially when the team's not winning. But you know, 2,000 people at a game just isn't going to cut it. It didn't cut it in Alabama. It shouldn't cut it in Gwinnett either.
Right.
So, instead of moving these teams, I would really rather just see the league get rid of them and take that talent, you know, take the force and take Larry Shipp and put him on a different team, take C.J. Johnson, put him on a different team, put, you know, R.J. Archer on a different team, Carlos Martinez on a different team, and that weeds out more of these players that really shouldn't be in this league anymore.
Great.
A lot of the guys that are playing in this league aren't even AF2 material from even just 3 years ago.
And a lot of stuff, you do reduce the rosters, it brings another one of your points, is that you reduce the rosters, sometimes these guys may have to go true Ironman position, I guess we could say. Yeah. Play both ways.
I would love to see them mandate it. I know it's not going to happen again, but if you cut the roster size, you go back to having to go find Will Pettis, having to go find, you know, a guy like a Marlon Moyamore would have to play fullback. A guy like a T.T. Tolliver, who really was a good defensive back once upon a time for a while, too, would have to be playing defensive back as well as wide receiver. Mm-hmm. The value for – and the other thing that does is it brings – it probably forces teams to think really hard about some of these veterans, and it may get some of the veterans back in the league. I don't know what to expect if that were to be the case, but and it also gives more money to the players. You know, you look at that pool. If you say you've got $10,000 a week to spend, well, what's going to go further, $10,000 a week on 18 guys or $10,000 a week on 22 guys?
Exactly.
So it's
simple math.
It's not that much of a difference, but every difference helps. And I think there isn't a player in the players' union that wouldn't agree with that sentiment, that every little difference would help.
Yep. Another thing that you had mentioned in particular about now, I think a lot of people were, and by the way, I think a lot of people were, I think, really angry at you when it came to the contraction part, because there are a lot of teams, you know, people, fans of teams that really don't think that they deserve to be contracted. So,
well, the truth of the matter is, this league has never brought back the exact same core of, you know, the exact same teams from 1 year to the next. It's never happened. It didn't even happen from 07 to 08.
No.
So it's we know of these 17 teams, at best I would say 15 of them will be back next year in the exact same locations that they were in. And that may be
exactly
a high number. That may be a really high number. Because I do think the league is going to look to get rid of a couple of these teams. And I think a couple of these owners are just going to say, this isn't viable. You're not making money. I'm sorry. You're not making money if you're the Georgia Force this year on 2,800 fans a game. It's not cutting it.
No, exactly. Now, you had mentioned also, I think some people were wanting some clarification on, you were talking about getting a new major TV network contract. Now, I think first and foremost, define major TV network. Can you do that?
The word major may not have been the best word there. I think the word primary would have been better. I hate the NFL Network deal, and I will point to this very coming week on the schedule. Local television broadcasts cannot take place during the NFL Network time slot, which is why you're only seeing two games, one that's starting at 10:30 and one that's starting at 11 o'clock on Friday night, because teams can't put their games on TV on Friday nights anymore, and Friday night was the staple of this league. I also think it's a big slap that Orlando and Tampa Bay, with the predominant cable contracts, you know, cable provider Bright House, in this area, cannot get the NFL Network unless they go to a bar or get a dish.
Exactly.
I know personally, I'm living in a place right now that does not let me have a dish. It's not even a matter of doesn't let. It's a matter of we just have too many damn trees.
Yeah, you wouldn't be. So, yeah, direct sight. Yeah.
So we cannot get a dish. So I cannot get the NFL Network in Orlando. Orlando and Tampa Bay are still two of the biggest fan bases in the league. It's who would be willing to cover the AFL? I don't think that the station's out there. I mean, maybe like a Spike TV or something that really, you know, maybe a True TV, something that really is kind of under the radar that you really don't know a whole heck of a lot about. But I would feel a lot better if there was nothing but local broadcasts as opposed to this crap we've got with the NFL Network. I don't know what you would put the Arena Bowl on at that point. I really don't.
I think they would have to go back to buying, and a lot of people don't know that when we had the games on ABC, when they had the games on ESPN, the championship games, it was time bought. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
We know this. And that may be the route to do it again. But mind you, it may be, I don't know what the production costs are.
History says it worked once before. Because all those time slots that were bought on ABC for all those Arena Bowls, it eventually did get us a contract with first NBC and then ESPN, and that's when we were becoming known as the, quote, fifth major sport.
Exactly.
So it worked. Will it work again? I don't know. Are the funds there to do it again? I'm not so sure.
Not true.
But I can tell you, history says it worked.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about if True TV can start off as they did. I think they were Court TV, now they're True TV. They're now a major staple within the NCAA basketball tournament.
They're now NCAA tournament TV. First round of the NCAA tournament TV.
Exactly. And the play-in, too, right?
I think they had something like 18 or 19 games on True TV, yeah, but they were all in that first week.
Exactly. And TBS also had some. So the, and those two, they, these two teams are, they are Turner, so they're Warner.
Yeah, I can't see TNT or TBS being willing to put these. I mean, maybe the Arena Bowl, but I doubt it.
Okay, now this is something that a lot of fans may know, or but we're going to mention it anyways. I know the old school ones know. Think of a revisionist history type of thing here, Adam. Since we're talking about
3 a.m. games on ESPN.
No. Think about what it would have been like. We have heard the story, supposedly, that a major network, I think it wasn't it CBS, who wanted to showcase one of the games. Think of what it would have been like today if the Arena Football League was on CBS. You know, if that had worked out. If that had worked out. Now, mind you, we've already been on ABC. We've been on NBC. Exactly. And obviously, television landscape these days
has CNN.
Yeah. Television landscape has changed dramatically since the early days, you know. Getting on ESPN back then, I think they were lucky to do. It was filler football.
Part of it was the launch of ESPN 2.
Yeah, that too. Oh, the Deuce.
Part of it really was the launch of the Deuce, because the Deuce was putting on nothing but, you know, fitness shows and World's Strongest Man competitions, and then all of a sudden they get this quirky little 50-yard game that they had on, and they used to have it on a lot. And sure, a lot of it played at 3 a.m, but that was a lot of it. Was when ESPN2 was becoming this new thing, and the bottom line was a new thing. We can't live without it now.
It's true. So, it's a matter. I think they need to find something where, it'll never be a type of thing where you're gonna have all games on one network like this CFL. There's just way too many games for the Arena Football League. But you need to have a local contract, obviously, in every single city.
I don't know the logistics of it, but I know that it happened. It's probably happened a lot this year, but I know it happened once in Orlando, where Orlando's Bright House Network picked up the Pittsburgh Power feed.
Exactly, it's perfect because it is a cost cutting measure. But
yeah, you send one crew to the game. The whole team does the game, and the road team's market also picks up the game. Or hell, even if you had, you know, even if you bought time somewhere else, and you know, maybe it would cost less money if you only bought the time and didn't require the announcers or anything else. I mean, I don't know. I would think the possibilities are endless, and yet we're stuck with this deal. And I just,
well, it's bad too when you have to go and search to watch the NFL Network online through a third party. You know that's bad.
Yeah, I mean the only games that I know of that were put, you know, quote live on the NFL Network, the only one I think was the playoff game between Orlando and Jacksonville last.
Yeah. So it's, you know, we were used to having all the playoff games, or at least on the weekend most of them being done. I remember the regional coverage that NBC used to do, but then again, you know, we were just a test, so to speak, for their, you know, for the Sunday night package that they ended up getting. But it was, you know, it was great knowing every week, unless we were bumped by something stupid, that we would be on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sunday afternoon in general was a failure, but...
But I'm just saying, yeah. But what would be able to replace the NFL Network, if anything? I don't know. Nobody's going to buy into it. It's not like the ESPN, you know, with the league folding, I think the ESPN thing.
Yeah, I would say that's probably out the window.
Yeah. So I don't know. It could be. It's very interesting. Would I be surprised?
It may take something really, totally revolutionary. I mean, I mean, for all I know, you get, you know, some network that an Oxygen or some stupid network like that that comes out and says, you know what, we're going to put football on a Wednesday night, and we're going to broadcast the game, and we're going to broadcast the hell out of it, because it's going to be the only thing going on a Wednesday night in the middle of the summer.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe that's what it takes.
Or it may take actually doing like what the NFL Network did last year is having, or it was the last year, they actually put a game online. And it was broadcast live online.
That was that Orlando-Jacksonville game because something I think it was NFL preseason bumped it.
Yeah, so it was actually online. Maybe that has to be done. You know, with everybody being attached to the internet these days, I mean...
And the league has tried that with Ustream, but the problem is...
Yeah, it's...
It sucks, I mean...
There are other better things. It's just, it's not consistent, which is very, very frustrating. There is also, you mentioned, real quickly we can talk about it, is that there needs to be a fair CBA with the players' union.
Yeah, and players' union needs to become more legit. Because the players' union, I know the players were playing to stand solidified a couple different times. I'm really not – I don't believe that there's anywhere near the 90% membership that Ivan Soto is trying to say there is. I would bet the number is less than half. I think it's a lot less than half. Mm-hmm. I think the reason for that is because these players just shuffle in and out of the league. A guy who's here in the league for 2 weeks probably is not going to be in the AFLPU.
No.
There are things that need to be done with that. And look, I could have written a book just on why we need a CBA in this league. But because fines, if Commissioner Kurz decides that a guy's going to get fined, he's going to get fined.
Exactly.
There's no appeal process. No. Maybe a CBA would then give us the ability for injury reports. Maybe it would then give us the ability to see more of why a trade that San Antonio is making with whatever team it was, the traded future considerations for apparently nothing. Why things like that happen. Players need some sort of leverage too. And right now the players have zero leverage. And on the same token, if there is a CBA and the players do agree to it, theoretically we shouldn't have to run the risk of what we had in week one where players were clearly going to either walk out or sit down. I mean, I know the players are saying they weren't going to walk. I don't necessarily believe that.
Right.
But we wouldn't be in that position.
And we wouldn't have that black eye. Basically, it is. That is the black eye.
The argument can be made that what happened on that Friday night was the darkest thing that's happened in American sports. It really could. And the fact that, thank goodness we weren't on ESPN for that. Thank goodness, because that would have been the end of it. It would have been over at that point.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. I know there are two more. We'll go over quickly because one leads into another that we wanted to talk about. And you made a good point. Commissioner Kurz, please, just say – don't say something negative, but quit saying everything's, as you called it, peaches and cream.
Yeah, every other commissioner on the face of the earth – knows the line, we're doing everything we can to make our product better on the field or the court or the whatever.
Yeah.
For some reason, the only time we hear that out of Commissioner Kurz's mouth is when something just changed. When AFL Field Pass Click Here came out. Click here to join AFL Field Pass on your podcast.
Yeah.
When that came out, that was the statement was something along the lines of, I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but we continue to do what we can to make the fan experience as good as possible. Well, okay, what about saying it on an NFL Network broadcast, saying that we know this isn't as good as it was in 2008. We know that he would have to be totally delusional to not think that the game that the product is not as good. And in my opinion, the product's not as good as it was in 2010 either. And that's it looks like we're taking steps backwards, and I'm certainly not the only one that feels like that. And hearing over and over that this team is doing, the Kansas City Command are doing great, and
right.
Gutierrez and his 50% completion percentage is the future of the AFL. If that's the future of the AFL, do any of us want to be a part of it?
Well, and it's true too. Even though we consistently can, and I will admit, I got pretty annoyed every time with Commissioner Baker. It was helmet popping, heart stopping, blah 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 football. He may have said that, but yet he also was able to see the, or at least mention the real picture.
And it was clear. for a lot of, and it wasn't every year, but it was clear that most years the AFL was taking steps in the right in a positive direction for the quality of football on the field and the quality for the fans. Now, what was it going backwards from an ownership standpoint? Probably. But it was going the right direction on the face of it that the fans could see. Now, and that's what's not happening right now.
No. And you know what's very funny too, Adam, is that, you know, we're the 25th year of the season, of the league. We talk about how the commissioners talk, how we feel that they should at least give us some information. And, you know, even if it's, you know, no matter, even if it's a small tidbit, you know, we can speculate from whatever they tell us. One thing I want you guys to do is this, and this is something that, and it just came to mind. I put something up a while ago on YouTube. I don't know if you've seen it either, Adam. It was Arena Bowl 1. It was founder Jim Foster talking at halftime about the Arena Football League. It is a very interesting listen. It's about 5 to 8 minutes long. It's on YouTube. And just to see how he talks about the league now, a brand new league compared to now, and you look at what the way that the league is now, you know, yes, we may be using the same pay structure and whatnot, but it's a totally different league. Even though we're 25 years down the line, it's so different the way he talks. And I think it's a matter of being how open he was about this new important league.
Tim will find that on YouTube tonight and put it on our message boards.
Yes. Yes, it will. If you can't, you can always do a search. It's one of the few things on YouTube. It's under most of my board names under Repact, so REPPACT. Like it is for my Twitter account. But I will post it. I will post it on the message boards. It's a very interesting watch, to see how he talks about the league, and you look at the way that it is now, and how Commissioner Kerr's, talks, peaches and cream. Last thing is that you wrote about, and something we're going to go into a little bit. We've mentioned it a few times this year already. It is still continuing to happen, even though at years past the league was basically saying, we are not going to be picking up these people. Do not sign anybody from the ankle biter leagues. It's continuing to happen, isn't it?
Yeah. Yuck. It's just why we need to bring in Tony Colston, who has already proven that he cannot play in this league, to come back to the league. I don't know. I still don't know what gives with Brian Randall. I still don't know what gives with Derek Cassidy.
He is starting again this week.
Oh, Cassidy's starting again this week?
Yep.
Okay, good. So Pittsburgh will put 38 points on the board this week.
But
instead,
the funny thing was is that Coach Siegfried was also talking about his other two quarterbacks. So he says they're not 100% ready. Makes me wonder if he gets one of those two back.
Oh, yeah. Brian Randall will be back in the PIFL.
Yeah.
He'll be back with Lehigh Valley.
Yeah.
In all likelihood. That is to say if the PIFL wants him back at that point. That's a different story.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just – it looks so bad. It really, it's not, it makes it look like it's not a tremendous thing to be with the AFL. Whereas in 2008, in 2008, it was so much better to be that 20th man on a roster in the AFL than it would be to be a star in the IFL, the AIFA, or any of those other, what we call as alphabet leagues. It was so much better. It was looked at that if a player came from your team, from a Lehigh Valley or a Sioux Falls or any of these good teams from the indoor leagues, when you had a player go to the AFL, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't happen in the middle of the season. We would not stoop to that under any circumstance. We wouldn't do it. We would go find a guy from the CFL to plug in for a while. We would go find a guy who didn't quite make it in the NFL to plug in for a while, to plug into these rosters. We didn't go after the AF2, and we didn't go after any of those other leagues. And now It's just like we're taking anybody we can find.
By the way, it's funny. Tony Colson comes over to the Georgia Force. R.J. Archer goes, mind you, so far it's only a weekend because he's only been suspended to the Detroit Lions minicamp.
And like, Colson was cut by the PIFL,
yeah,
by the way.
I don't,
benched and cut.
Does this seem a little weird that this happens the same week?
Well, no. I mean, obviously, this is why it happened. Georgia needed a quarterback.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they obviously knew R.J. Archer was not going to be there. My question is, are they going to be starting Kevin Eakin, or are they going to be starting Tony Colston? If they start Colston, I just – if you can't play for a PIFL team, what are you doing starting in the AFL?
There's a lot of the quarterbacks, too, that they could have picked up. I mean, hell, even a former CFLer, Casey Printers, is a hell of a lot better quarterback than this guy.
And he's playing in the IFL.
I know.
But that, again, that's the type of thing. You're going to take one of these guys out of this league? I mean, really? There aren't other guys out there? The fuck? Bring – sorry. Beep.
Yeah, go.
bring back freaking Todd Hamill. At least, you know, that was better, I think.
He has a history. That's the thing. People know who the name. You know? He may have to bring his walker with him when he gets it behind center, but at least people know the name.
See?
And he can throw the ball.
Yeah, it's just the argument could be made, was it better for Pittsburgh when they brought in Derek Cassidy or when they brought in Brian Randall? Because Derek Cassidy was a backup quarterback in the PIFL. When he was signed, but at least he was signed to be a backup quarterback. It happens to be because of injury he was made a starting quarterback. Brian Randall was a starting quarterback and brought in apparently to be a starting quarterback.
Oh, but sorry, I apologize. For Pittsburgh, it's Brian Randall that's going to be starting. Isn't that what I said?
You said Derek Cassidy.
Yeah, sorry. Brian Randall will be making his third consecutive start.
Okay, but you know, Georgia may be taking a guy that was cut by the PFL, and not cut just so he can go to the AFL. Cut because he sucked. He threw 13 touchdowns, he threw 10 picks, and he was benched. If you're bringing that guy in to start, it looks really bad. It looks really, really bad on the AFL. Because if that saying is, the difference between the PIFL and the AFL is not much. The only difference, the way I put it in the article, is the only difference is starting to become the Nets. And that's going to change too next year.
Yeah.
There's already a couple venues that have Nets up.
Former AF2 teams.
Are they only former AF2 teams?
Well, think about it for a second right now. If I'm not mistaken, I think Green Bay is one of them. They're using them, but not using the Nets. And there is there's one more team that used to be a.
Yeah, I don't know. I know there are teams in both the. I think it's both in the IFL and the PIFL. That have the Nets, and supposedly, I guess, the Texas League, the Lone Star League or whatever
okay.
it is,
okay.
Is also looking at the idea of using the Nets for next year.
Well, it throws in a whole different game. That's the thing. It'll change their game drastically. You know, no more Rouges.
Who knows?
Or who knows? Yeah. But is it a domino effect, Adam, that is – it's bringing all the negativity. Is it, you know, it goes from the players, players to not knowing the rosters, to the, you know,
Yeah, I think about this. Tony Colston, assuming that everything is still the same way that it was at the start of the year, and we have no reason to believe otherwise, he's going to be making four times what Larry Shipp is going to make this week.
Yeah.
If he's starting.
You're right.
This is a guy that didn't have a job and couldn't cut it in an ankle-biter league. And he's going to be making four times the salary of anybody else on the team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, how would you like to be a good backup – well, not – I mean, it's kind of an oxymoron. But how would you like to be a backup quarterback in this league that's been a backup quarterback every week? That's clearly better than Tony Colston.
I'll put one out here. How about a Raymond Filia, which we know is technically on one of the lists for the league. He is a lot better quarterback. He's a lot better quarterback as a backup.
I mean, maybe Matt Grothy. Maybe, I mean Chris Leak from the last couple weeks. How would you like to be any of these guys?
Yeah.
But I still think, you know, it's like you look at a picture of this happened in Arizona, or a picture of this happened in San Jose. and you bring in a guy like a Tony Colson to play with your team, and you've got James Rowe, and you're going to look James Rowe in the face and say, ha ha, I'm making over $1,600 a week and you're making $400.
And James Rowe would give him a sucker punch. But I know what you mean.
It doesn't make sense.
If you have Chris Leak who walks out because he's been benched, because he goes from being paid $1,600 a game to $400 a game, think about what it's going to be like. I said, I agree with you. I agree with you on this point. I think it's a domino effect that has occurred the entire year. Some of these dominoes need to be glued down with some super glue. Some of these, turn into a giant Jenga game. Yes, have a couple of things here that you can pull out and something's not going to, be a little bit scary, but, sometimes there needs to be a little bit of change. But
I think, again, we're talking about revolutionary ideas that clearly aren't going to happen overnight, no. But if the AFL was going to keep this framework and basically play, and, I don't care what you want to call it, but I'm going to call it an AF2 style of football under this single entity bullcrap and all that,
mm-hmm.
that maybe this league needs to look into the idea of telling some of these teams from the PIFL and the IFL, you want to become our affiliates?
Yeah.
If that were the case, then you're setting yourself up to have a quote major league and a quote minor league.
And there was talk a few years ago of this possibly occurring, but nothing ever came of it, or they were just rumors or whatnot, but could it improve the play? Yes. Could it?
Maybe.
I think if you have a quarterback that's having more reps, I think it would work.
Yeah,
not for every quarterback.
Yeah, and I think it's also very clear that there is some talent in these leagues.
Yes.
I know we make fun of them being the ankle biters, but there's some talent in these leagues. And there are players in those leagues that are a whole hell of a lot better than some of the players that are playing in the AFL. So at that point, what that would be able to do for you is it would make it so those players, you would at that point have, quote, the best indoor football players in the world.
Yeah.
The guys that are the best indoor players that are willing to play for less than minimum wage, on the field. Then you could at least advertise that. Because right now, I'm not even sure the league believes it anymore. I'm not sure that anyone outside of Jerry Kurz really believes that the 17 teams, the 21-man rosters on the 17 teams are the best indoor football players in the world.
Right.
Whereas in 2008, we clearly knew that. Not to say that there weren't guys here and there, but it was very small, a very small number of the best players that weren't playing in the AFL.
Mm-hmm.
And the number is a lot bigger right now.
Yeah. So it's one last domino that we could talk about. We've mentioned it. We mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast. Is once again the attendance woes.
It all comes together with that. It really does.
Yeah.
If you have players that are making more money, you have more talent. You have more talent. You have more fans. You have multi-year contracts. You have players that can legitimately be marketed in their own community. You have more fans. So then there's the age-old question: which came first, the chicken or the egg? Which is going to come first? The attendance is going to bring more revenue to the league, or is the league going to have to spend more money to get more fans to make more revenue?
Exactly.
So if the league's not willing to spend the money until the fans come, are the fans going to come with a product that's bad? And I think the clear answer is no. No, they're not. This was the first week since 1990. In week three in 1990, if there wasn't one game with at least 10,000 fans attended.
Yep.
Listed. Not even in actuality. Listed.
Yep. 11th time in league history, but still, that is a huge gap. It shows how far the league had come and how far the league has fallen.
And back in 1990, there were three games. Three games per week. Back in 1989, there were, two games per week. There were five teams. So, this time you had eight games, and one of them was in Tampa Bay, and one of them was in Philadelphia, and one of them was in Arizona, and one of them was in Chicago. These are venues that have been around for a while that historically pulled 14,000, 15,000, 16,000 a game.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I made the comment about the war on I-4 in my article in that game. 8,400 fans, there have never been fewer than 10,000. at an Orlando-Tampa Bay game. I counted maybe a dozen Predator fans there. Maybe. We used to send three buses full of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't include all the people who did it on their own to these games. You know, the game between Arizona and San Jose, 9,200 fans. You know, those are what should be the, quote, premier games for these teams every year.
And Pittsburgh alone also, they set themselves a record for the lowest attendance for a single game in team history of 41-17.
Yeah, the only thing nice we can say is that Kansas City set a record for its best attendance under the moniker of the Command.
Yeah.
Milwaukee's
had, 2 weeks ago, had one of their best
But again, we're saying best. What we're saying best in Kansas City and best in Milwaukee, almost 20 years ago, Milwaukee was putting 13,000-14,000 people in the Bradley Center. Same venue. You know, Kansas City, same venue, Sprint Center, 08, put 13,000-14,000 fans in there every single week.
Right.
So we're celebrating 6,000 fans. And that's problematic to me. That's really, really problematic.
Yeah, to me,
it's getting worse. It's not getting better. It's getting worse.
Well, I know the only way is to try and fix these things. It's, I can understand maybe it has to do with some of these places needed. You know, if you had players, you can still go into the community. Is it up to the league to do the advertising for these teams? Is it up to the actual team itself? I think it's a combination of both, in my opinion.
Now, ultimately, if you're single entity,
yeah,
your single entity expenses too.
But
I don't know.
Something has to be done. I don't want to see the league fail. Do we want to see Commissioner Kurz get to his next press release, which will probably be next year, about another extension? Yes. But something has to be done.
That'll be a 2-year extension through 2091.
But something needs to be done. Look at the games this week. Yeah, I mean, there are some possibilities. I mean, Cleveland, Friday night, 3 games. Cleveland-Milwaukee. It's not a bad matchup, Adam, at all.
No, but it could be another one of these games that struggles to reach 80 points.
Yeah, and it's on NFL Network.
Yeah, and there could be 4,000 fans there.
I'm hoping that's not the case. I'm hoping they can draw another 6. I'm hoping.
Even so, 6 in a venue that holds 15,
I know,
doesn't look good.
No, but what my actual hope, for the Milwaukee franchise, as people may or may not know, that they are having a throwback game versus the Philadelphia Soul in July.
You should have done it this week.
Yeah, oh, I know. To have that throwback game, going back to the teal and purple, it would be epic to have them draw 10,000. For that game, or get close to 10,000 for that game.
I'd bet dollars to donuts doesn't happen.
It would be nice. It would be nice.
There's a lot of things that would be nice.
Yeah.
You know, seeing the Arena Bowl actually be packed in New Orleans would be nice, but I would bet that's not going to happen either.
No. Lower Bowl, maybe.
That's going to be the real test, by the way, with attendance. If that place looks like the graveyard looks like right now, which, for lack of a better term, looks like a graveyard, at the Arena Bowl, that's going to be the sign that this league is in some serious trouble. Mm. If it looks like it did in San Juan for the Arena Cup, it's going to be problematic.
It'll be interesting to see. They've been drawing a little bit better in New Orleans. The team's playing half-decent, but it may be a harder sell to sell to pay the tickets. Now, the tickets are pretty decently priced. Will they move people down? I don't know.
Will they have people who are paid to sit in the seats? That we don't know.
No,
will they be doing a canned food drive before the game for tickets?
We don't know.
But anyway, back to
this week.
Back to the game on the field.
Yeah.
Cleveland's coming off a bye. That's never good. Even though, yeah, I mean, look, it happened in New Orleans last week. Took the big lead against Jacksonville, fell apart again off of the bye week. So Cleveland's the team off of the bye week now. home game for Milwaukee off with a big win. The Mustangs shouldn't lose this game.
No. And by the way, speaking of last week's New Orleans-Jacksonville game, if my stats are correct, it was the third game this year to fall within the top 10 of games blown slash whatever comebacks of 20-plus points.
Hey, Southern Division.
Yep, Southern Division. Great matchup, and we were mentioning about this earlier before. Utah travels to San Jose.
Yeah, another one of these games that, I mean, obviously winner's going to be in first place. That's...
And hold a tiebreak.
And if it's Utah, yeah.
Yeah.
This is really almost the exact same situation for Utah that San Jose was in last week. Mm-hmm. San Jose knew if it went on the road, it was going to have the season sweep of Arizona and hold that ever-important tiebreaker. Utah now knows the same thing. Again, another one-point game, first time around, 60-59. Just kind of pulling up the stats right now from that. It was not a great game from Mark Reeb. Threw 5 touchdowns, 2 picks. Grady threw for 339 with 7 touchdowns. Aaron LeSway and Alvance Robinson, no surprise, both had monster games. God, there were 25 penalties in that game. That's ridiculous. That shouldn't happen. But a game that Utah wins with 10 seconds left. So, you know, it's and wow, yeah, missed extra points really killed really ended up killing San Jose in that game. But Utah's good enough to win this game.
Yes, they are.
Really is. I think this could be a big statement of a game against a San Jose team that's very, very good. I'll definitely be taking the points, I'll tell you that.
I figure this could easily be an 80-something to 80-something score. Easily.
Yeah, and there's no reason to think that there won't be at least 120 points on the board in this game.
Sabercats lead the series all-time 6-3. Leading all the way back, obviously, to 2006. And the home team, Adam, has won the last 4.
Yeah. Like I said, we said right at the top, Utah's one of these teams that's kind of been flying under the radar. This would be the game that, if it won, would take it out from under the radar.
Yep. And, by the way, it looks like the home team, which is, which is one of the last 4, has scored an average over 70 points.
Somebody's probably going to get at least 65 in this game.
Yeah. Another game on the left coast. New Orleans travels to Spokane.
Yeah. Spokane's coming off of a very, very kind of bad game.
New Orleans is coming off the collapse.
And New Orleans is coming off the collapse. And what we've You know, the question is this Orlando – I'm sorry, is this – Freudian slip. Is this New Orleans team going to have the same mindset that Orlando team did? You know, where – because that next week after that loss to Pittsburgh was the one game Orlando came out and won this year. This is a tough spot, though. Spokane is still – I don't care how good or bad they are. It's still a hellacious place to go play. And it's a tremendously long road trip. And the teams try to cram this – you know, these things into 2-day trips. I tend to think the Shock are going to win this game. I wouldn't be surprised if the Voodoo came out and win, but I do think there's too much offense there for Spokane for New Orleans.
There is now. I totally agree with you. Even though even Kyle Riley technically had one of his worst games of the year. I mean, 3 interceptions, but yet he still threw for 9 touchdowns, 352 yards passing. I mean, he even outthrew Tommy Grady by almost 100 yards.
That just means your kick return game's not as good.
But, yeah, I would not be surprised. I think New Orleans may stay in this game for a half, if that. But I think if it comes to a matter of going score for score, I would not be surprised if Spokane pulls away and wins this one in the second half. So, Saturday. Oh, well, we have a Southern Division matchup.
Always entertaining Southern Division matchups.
Tampa Bay travels to Georgia, which I guess the over-under will be blue seats to fans at the Gwinnett Center.
I was at this game the first time around when these teams played, and Tampa Bay won, and Tampa Bay won convincingly on the scoreboard. I was not convinced Tampa Bay was the better of the two teams, though. Well, we have to remember about the Storm. Yes, they're 5-3. Yes, we see they're playing good football. They've played good football these last 2 weeks against Orlando and Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Let's not get overly excited about this. The team is still winless on the road, and Georgia has been such a freaky little bipolar team. I mean, who's starting a quarterback? We don't know that. Is this going to be the team that got trashed by Philly, or is this going to be the team that came out and trashed Chicago?
Right.
I tend to think that Tampa Bay is going to fall apart on the road again, because I've seen nothing that has made me think that Tampa Bay can play on the road yet. They play better at home. I don't know why, they just do.
Yep.
But I'll take Georgia and roll the dice with Tony Colson, I guess. But I think this is going to be the type of game that you look at and you see Tampa Bay is going to be favored by a touchdown, and you're going to look at the end of the game and say, wow, you know what, these two teams aren't separated by that much one way or the other.
Exactly. Even though the home team has won the last 5 out of 6 games, Adam, in the series dating back to late 2007, I just think, just by looking at the teams, and I said, I know Georgia looks very, very discombobulated. I think Tampa Bay, I think for Tampa, especially with the way the Southern Division is, it's going to have to, I think this will be a statement for them. They need the win in the division. I think they need the win, period. I think they will be able to pull this road game off.
Oh, well, if they do, they're probably going to run away and hide from the rest of the South.
Yeah. Next on the schedule, Jacksonville, Philadelphia. First and foremost, we do not know who is going to be starting in Jacksonville. We are under the impression that it is going to be Bernard Morse, I think.
Still haven't seen another quarterback signed by them yet this week, though.
Yeah, and we don't know when it comes to...
They'll be starting quarterback number 29. If Omar Jacobs doesn't play, whoever starts for Jacksonville will be starting quarterback number 29 in the mm-hmm. league this year.
Not sure. Haven't seen any reports, anything out of the press or anything concerning him. So I don't know who's going to be starting. I think for Philadelphia right now, I think they're ticked. They lost last week. Even though it was a poor game, even though you score. How can you say it's a poor game where you score over 60 points for your umpteenth game in a row?
Dan Bradbaugh has not been as good as his numbers suggest, as the team's offensive numbers suggest.
Yeah. I see Philadelphia. I think they're pissed.
Jacksonville's defense has been bad too. I mean, yeah. Tommy Grady threw 10 touchdowns against this team on the road. There's no reason to think Philly's not going to score 80 in this game. I mean, really. There's nothing there that makes us think, especially if Bernard Morris is going to go 8 of 20 he did last week.
Yeah.
There's no reason to think Philly can't win this game by how many ever points it wants to win it by. But then again, this is the same Philly team that did get beat at home by Cleveland.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, it's also the same team that really the argument could be made should be undefeated still.
True.
And I think pound for pound is still the best team in the league.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think a close second, probably be one of the teams in the West, but I don't know which one to choose. That's the thing. Pittsburgh travels to San Antonio. Well,
wow, Georgia. Wow, I'm sorry, they just put up betting lines. Georgia's actually favored in that game against Tampa Bay.
By how much?
3.
Interesting.
I'll just run through them real quick. Milwaukee by 5.5 over Cleveland. San Jose by 8.5 over Utah. Spokane by 4.5 over New Orleans. Philly by 13.5 over Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Georgia by 3 over Tampa Bay. San Antonio by 10.5 over Pittsburgh. Iowa by 13.5 over Kansas City. And Arizona by a touchdown over Chicago.
Wow.
126 over-under on that Utah-San Jose game.
I bet the over.
It's hard to bet over with 126 points.
Really?
Yeah, it's hard. I'm not saying it's not going to get there. It's just hard to do. But yeah. Anyway, keep going.
No, as you can say, if it comes to me and betting, no. I wouldn't know where to go when it came to San Antonio, Pittsburgh.
Here's the thing about San Antonio. They looked real bad last week against Kansas City.
Yeah, I know they did. I know.
They were actually losing to Kansas City for a while and losing by multiple possessions for a while. I'm not laying 10.5, I'll tell you that, but the powers just shoot themselves in the foot. This team There's still only two wins for this team, and they're still both against Orlando. So, I mean, San Antonio's got to win this game at home, you'd think.
You think. Pittsburgh, I know they want to get that other win, saying that they're just not a one-team wonder. So, yeah.
Oh, they definitely beat two different Orlando teams.
Yeah, you're right. Good point.
This game's going to be bad. This game's going to suck.
Actually, so could the Kansas City-Iowa game.
Yeah, this game's going to suck, too.
I think maybe the question is how many touchdowns is Jesse Schmidt going to catch, and how many rushing touchdowns is Rodney Filer going to have?
It's how long until Matt Gutierrez gets benched so I can laugh.
You'll laugh even if he doesn't get tossed, doesn't get released.
Oh, the second he gets benched, I'll laugh.
Okay.
And if he gets released, it's going to be all the more funny.
Exactly. Face of the franchise. Yeah.
It's the league. Forget the franchise.
Yeah, Iowa. Iowa in this one, I think so, too. But
it's hard to see Kansas City beating anybody, but if it's going to happen, it's going to happen next week at Pittsburgh.
Yeah, true.
When is Danton Bartow getting fired, by the way? Is there really any reason that Orlando, Kansas City, and Pittsburgh have hung on to their head coaches this long? Really?
Well, Pittsburgh, I think, is probably based on what Siegfried did, and they're probably giving him a mulligan for what happened in week one. I think that's with it. Now, the thing is, they may be doing the same thing in Orlando.
And what's your excuse for Danton Bartow? Radio silence.
Silence, dude. I really don't know.
How many more games does this team would have to get blown out of the water in? Is this team ever going to score 50 in a game? Ever?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Could be this week?
It's going to have to be. Stick around.
Yeah. Last game of the docket, Arizona hosts Chicago. Arizona is coming off a very, very tough loss, I guess, to San Jose, you know, coming off of a huge rivalry game. This is a Chicago team that finally was able to get back into the win column by beating Iowa last week.
Yeah, Chicago made itself better last week.
Yeah, they did. But then I think they'll be able to keep pace with Arizona. But I just don't think they're going to be able to beat Arizona at home.
Well, if memory serves me, the Rush have a good history here in this building. I haven't looked it up, but if memory serves me, they do. I don't know. There's something about both of these teams that just rubs me wrong.
Overall series is 6-5 for Arizona. And dating back to 2007, it has been Chicago has won the last 5 out of 6 games, and it didn't matter where they were, or at home or on the road, didn't matter. Chicago.
Yeah. So I think Chicago can win this game. I'll go with that. I'll go with Chicago, even though it's short week for the Rush. That's okay.
That's true, too, yeah.
It's not like we haven't seen a team come in here on short rest and be able to win the Arena Bowl.
That's it. Oh, yeah. Good point. Very good point. So, yeah, I mean, it's...
And then I'm taking the bye week over Orlando. I'm taking the bye week and the points.
Nice. So for a...
That's good. That's going to give the bye week 2 wins on the year.
Hey, they'll match what they'll match what Pittsburgh has, and they'll have 1 more than Orlando,
and 2 more than Kansas City.
2 more than Kansas City.
I mean, I'm not going to give the bye week wins over Orlando and all them teams the first time around. You know, maybe I should give them a win over Kansas City the first time around too, but yeah.
Yeah.
Bye week by touchdown.
Bye week by touchdown. Nice. Before we finish, any last comments?
Game 7 tomorrow night. Capitals Rangers. I'm sorry, not tomorrow night, on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to make watching AFL hard. Nothing like a Game 7 in hockey.
That's true. I agree with you on that one. But there are some half-decent games. I think if I were to catch a game this next week, it would, besides on Friday night, just see how many points Philadelphia scores. Maybe the Arizona-Chicago game since it's late.
Saturday slate really isn't very good. I'll be watching Game 7.
And the Zona game is online on Cox 7, if they can get it running.
We hope.
So, okay, So we will see you guys next week. By the way, if you haven't listened to it already, last week we had a very exclusive interview with the reporter who was covering the test game, Charlie Rayman. Rayman, sorry. And it is, you can listen to it on episode 10. It's episode 10 for this year. A very good listen, and just a great history lesson to hear about the league. And as I mentioned before, I'll make sure that I get up that link to the halftime interview with AFL founder Jim Foster. Just a reminder also, if you have any questions, concerns, whatever, if you want to give us a question for the open mic segment, you can do so.
Oh, we never addressed that.
That's okay.
Oh, well, we'll get it next week. Yeah, sorry, Thomas, we'll get you next week.
We will get it next week. There are multiple ways that you can contact us. Facebook, Twitter, it's both at ArenaFan. There's myself, Tim.Capper at ArenaFan.com, and Adam.Markowitz at ArenaFan.com.
Send your hate mail to Tim.
That's Adam.Markowitz at ArenaFan.com. So for everybody here at the AFL Tonight studios, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.